The ups and downs of federal budgeting require managers to be nimble and creative. Doug Criscitiello has learned a few lessons from decades of work in federal finance. He was chief financial officer of the Housing and Urban Development Department and also held posts at the Congressional Budget Office and the Office of Management and Budget. He's now the managing director of the Global Public Sector Practice at Grant Thornton, and now he's inducted into the National Academy of Public Administration. Doug Criscitiello joins me now with what he hopes to do at NAPA. Doug, good morning.
Hey, good morning, Tom. How are you?
All right, good to have you back. So
thanks.
Before we get to the NAPA, I want to ask, you've had about a couple of years now in the private sector after a long stint in government, and I know you've sort of been back and forth.
Yeah.
But looking back now from the perspective of Grant Thornton, what does federal finance look like to you? Is it as confusing as it sometimes seems and as variable as it is to people on the inside?
Yeah, no, I actually think it appears more straightforward from the outside. I think when you're in the middle of it, there's so many moving pieces, it tends to be, or at least it feels quite complex, and in actuality it is. But from the outside, I think to detach yourself from the inner workings of government, I think it's somewhat easier to get an overarching perspective on the challenges facing government.
Of course, you have the global portfolio, so the United States government is pretty much pay-as-you-go, cash accounting at the core of it. Is that the way it is in most countries?
Yeah, it's interesting in that, you know, one thing I've been talking about a fair amount of late is that the U.S. government doesn't distinguish between investment and consumption spending. And in many governments, they treat investment spending differently, right? So it's not uncommon whether in another country or even here in the U.S. at the state and local levels of government to borrow money for investment and just to pay debt service on a pay-as-you-go basis, on a year-by-year basis. So if you're going to fund a big capital project, let's say a major bridge, it's a perfectly acceptable form of public finance to pay for that over the years, to have the beneficiaries of that investment pay for the cost of building it during the useful life of the project.
In other words, how it's done by a lot of states, but
right,
not
right.
by the federal government.
Exactly.
Well, what are some of the national governments that operate that way?
Well, there's some really interesting examples out there. Australia is a particularly interesting case study in that they've embraced the use of public-private financing and for a lot of that nation's infrastructure. So it's interesting to compare and contrast how they're building out their physical infrastructure and what the U.S. is doing. And another component to it, it's just not just physical infrastructure, but it includes scientific infrastructure, right? Spending on basic research and development, biomedical research. You know, these are forms of investment spending that are quite a bit different than or the process that's used to fund them are different in some places.
Because we have this very elaborate grant process, which is, you know, aside, it's appropriated money, but it's spent differently than we do on contracting. So that's one way we pay for basic research is just through grants, direct outlays from appropriations
to
grantees.
Right, but from a budgetary perspective, that process is very similar to paying for anything else. I mean, it may be reserved and may spend more slowly, but the budgetary process is identical. You're still providing the funds up front, and they're being spent. The U.S. has had difficulty funding some long-term initiatives that other countries have participated in around the world. A good example of that is a group known as GAVI, the Global Alliance for Vaccines and Immunizations, where other countries have promised this organization a stream of funds for years into the future, and that group's used those payment promises to raise a big lump sum of money today so that it can get out in continents like Africa and do a lot of childhood vaccines and immunizations, whereas the U.S. is unable to make that promise without it all scoring in year one. So there really are some key differences between how the federal government handles its budgeting process in other countries.
To your knowledge, has there ever been any serious effort in Congress to look at some of these issues?
Not in many, many years. You know, there was a commission in 1967 that formed the basis for...
You were in high school then, right?
That's right. Yeah, that was just a couple of years after I graduated college. You know, it's interesting in that commission in 67 formed the basis for the Congressional Budget and Empowerment Control Act of 74. And, I mean, we've been trying to work with the Budget Act since 74. It's gone through a number of iterations. It's been revised a number of times, most recently the Budget Control Act of 2011. But, you know, it's a process that doesn't work very well. I think more people need to be questioning the Budget Act of 74. The purists, the believers in the Budget Act, feel that our elected officials are failing us here, that the process is good. I disagree. I think we have enough data under our belts where we know that this budget process doesn't work as designed. In fact, since it really got up and running, so let's call it 1980, in the last 34 years, the number of years where the budget process has worked as intended is 3. It's worked 3 out of 34. I mean, that's a terrible batting average. And, you know, I would be a firm advocate for thinking creatively about how we might do things in a different manner so that we actually have on-time budgets. We actually don't get into debates about debt ceilings. You know, that's just silly to me. We should have that baked into the process where we're not debating between the White House and the Hill about whether we need to increase, you know, the debt limit every year. So I think there's a lot of improvements that could be made.
And when agencies come to you now, what are the biggest challenges they find that they need to go outside for consulting help and other kinds of help?
Well, agencies, you know, I think there's always budgetary pressure. You know, it was interesting. During the great surplus years of the late 90s, I was up working for the city of New York, and I missed it. I guess I should probably leave town again. Maybe we could get some surpluses going. But there's a new normal out there. It's nothing like I've ever seen. There's always been budgetary pressure. You know, having worked on this stuff since the 80s, you know, go back to the Graham Rudman type sequesters that were occurring back then. So there's always budgetary pressure. But now, you know, I keep saying this time it's for real. You know, we're looking at decades into the future here as the baby boomers retire. The demographics of the nation, the entitlement programs we have designed to help folks as they retire are just costing so much that we can't get around the fact that we're going to have to make some very difficult decisions. So agencies are coming to us with some urgency around figuring out what works in their agencies, trying to find out what works. And, you know, those are the programs that are going to be funded ultimately. And the flip side of that is, you know, the government has to stop funding what doesn't work. And these are core principles. You know, there's a good group of us in a group here in Washington known as Results for America who are calling that Moneyball, right? Applying Moneyball principles to government. A moment ago, I was just applying a Moneyball principle to the federal budget process. And, you know, if you're batting under 100, you probably need to go down to the minor leagues or find a different profession altogether.
We're speaking with Doug Crisitello. He's the Managing Director of Global Sector Practice at Grant Thornton, recently inducted into the National Academy of Public Administration. And let's talk about NAPA for a moment. What is it you hope to do there? I guess it was somewhat of a surprise to get this nomination. You got some pretty smart cookies that nominated you.
Yeah, boy, just a very, very impressive group. I've worked with NAPA over the last 20, 25 years, so I knew it pretty well beforehand. I had never really imagined myself as part of it, but I'm thrilled to be a fellow. It's, boy, what a roster of talent there. It is just incredible. And I intend to be a very active member and to help the group with budgetary issues, as we're discussing here, but also assisting on initiatives involving the government in the financial services sector. So the government is both a regulator of the banking industry, but also as a participant in the financial marketplace.
And so I guess you might be – you've lectured at colleges and so forth over the years. In contact with people in college or maybe early in their financial careers, what can you say to them after everything we've talked about, why public finance can be a rewarding career?
It absolutely is, because there's nothing that's more interesting. It's what keeps driving me to engage in government and to keep going back into government service, even though I'm one of these people that have utilized the revolving door, which I don't see that metaphor in a negative way. It's just so multifaceted. It's not, you know, I went to college in Rochester, New York. I went to public policy graduate school there. And we used to talk extensively about the fact, you know, Rochester, the home of Xerox, right? So we used to talk.
And Kodak.
Right, and Kodak. We used to say, this is a great profession. We're not learning how to sell copiers, right? We're not. That's a very linear job. Just, you know, talk about narrow. Hey, here's my job, to sell this widget, to sell this copier. With government, there are just so many issues that enter the equation. That's why I said earlier, it's when you're in the middle of it, there's just so much swirling around, constantly exciting, exhilarating. Just, it's just a tremendous profession. I really can't think of anything all that much better, unless you can throw a fastball about 100 miles an hour, and maybe playing for the Nats in the evening would be a fun thing. But it's just a terrific profession. And, you know, I just was on a recruiting trip, and we were at a couple of schools, and it was just nice to be able to provide insights to current students about what they could do here in Washington. And working in the consulting profession, working for some of the contractors here in Washington, that's a part of it too. And that's something I always say, even when I'm in government, right? The contractors they're partners here. And you look at examples of where contractors have played such a positive role for government. I like to cite the movie Apollo 13, where, you know, the pile of miscellaneous junk that's up on the space module are dumped onto a table, and the folks are told, here, you got to build an air filter out of this. That's a bunch of contractors that built that. So, you know, talking about a key partner, there's a great example of it with the space program.
And we can hear the enthusiasm in your voice. And now that you are connected with NAPA, does the company give you some dispensation time-wise to be able to do some of those public-spirited things?
Absolutely. I mean, that's part of the arrangement here, that I'm going to spend some of my time with NAPA. And again, hey, look, I have a little motto I use within Grant Thornton. Good government is good business, right? So to the extent that Grant Thornton is out there, which it does in a very big way, providing the government with deep insights into how to do what it does better, it's good for us because we become a go-to contractor, but it's good for government. I mean, it's just a virtuous cycle. And now working with NAPA, I hope to have my hands on even more issues that I'm dealing with now, and we are absolutely committed to help wherever we can.
Doug Crisitello is the managing director of the Global Public Sector Practice at Grant Thornton and a new inductee to the National Academy of Public Information Service. National Academy of Public Administration.
Right.
We have too many of these groups that we deal with. NAPA, not to be confused with auto part dealers.
That's right.
And we will have you back when you learn some more.
Thanks, Tom.